The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Monday market mania. A global stock rout deepens in Asia, continuing the Friday sell-off on Wall Street. Treasuries and the yen rally in the haven rush as traders bet the Fed will now need to cut rates aggressively to fend off a recession.
We're seeing selling in pretty much everything at the moment.
There is a lot of panic in the market. We're seeing traders reacting to the U.S. jobs report. Those concerns of a greater than expected downshift in the American economy. And
brace yourselves then for a challenging day across these markets.
Bought the most. We haven't seen declines like this ever. This is the worst decline you're seeing on record. Of course, tech stocks taking a beating, and this is not helped along by what we're seeing from Berkshire Hathaway, more than halving or about halving its stake in Apple. So a lot of headwinds in the markets today.
So all of these factors have actually materialized and they've contributed. But of course, as you were saying, the most important has been the U.S. data weakness. I think the U.S. data weakness has also surprised us a bit.
And by the way, the healthcare numbers, you know, the government runs half of the healthcare industry. So those are a lot of those are government jobs as well. Look, we're not creating the jobs in the industries we want them. You know, we want people building things and making things. We want jobs in our technology sector. We want manufacturing job, construction job, business service jobs. And those have not really grown much at all, whereas you're seeing this big flabby government, which, by the way, is losing $2 trillion a year. Andy, too, if you're running a business that's losing $2 trillion, do you go on a hiring spree? I mean, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
So
don't say that.
We have never been down 1,000 points ever, not even intraday on the NASDAQ.
Is that true?
That is true.
Okay. Down 6% right from the get-go. This is heavy, heavy, big tech. Here we go. Look at them go down.
And markets around the globe this morning are selling off. Overnight, Japan's Nikkei plunged 12%, its worst day since the 1987 Black Monday crash. Here, investors are responding to that Friday jobs market report on the jobs market, showing that employers added just 114,000 jobs in July, and that was well below the 185,000 forecast. The unemployment rate jumped to 4.3%, which is still very low, but it shows joblessness has increased more than 0.5% since January. And it's something that it just doesn't usually happen in a healthy economy. A rise like that is historically a sign that a recession is imminent.
All that, ladies and gentlemen, and everyone else, that is called Bidenomics. That is called Bidenomics, and we are very proud of Bidenomics.
From the Northwest Ambulance Service confirming that 8 patients were treated for stab wounds at the scene here in Hart Street.
And hundreds of people have attended a vigil last night to pay tribute to the 3 girls who were killed there in a knife attack at a children's dance workshop. Just hours later, violent clashes broke out close to where the girls were stabbed to death.
Witnessing here with people trying to burn down hotels with migrants / asylum seekers in them, people running around immigrant communities shouting racial slurs against Asian Brits. I mean, this is racist violence, the sort of which that people felt had been confined to the history books.
He's trying to get in.
They're in. Oh, wow.
They're in the hotel. be in no doubt those that have participated in this violence will face the full force of the law. I guarantee you will regret taking part in this disorder, whether directly or those whipping up this action online.
Any person organising or taking part in the procession is committing an offence.
Some of the suspects and perpetrators have already been arrested, already facing charges and are in custody, but we expect more of that to continue because it's really important that communities can feel safe on the streets and there are consequences for breaking the law.
This is not protest. It is organised, violent thuggery. And it has no place on our streets or online. I won't shy away from calling it what it is. Far-right thuggery.
Overseas now, and to the growing concerns that the war in the Middle East could explode beyond Israel's borders. The U.S. deploying ships and fighter jets to the region.
And this entire region on edge this morning as we know this Iranian retaliation for those Israeli assassinations earlier this week could be coming any time now. This as the U.S. military assets are moving into position as we speak. Cruisers, destroyers, fighter jets, all designed to help defend Israel against what is expected to be a large missile barrage at the very least. It could be as big or bigger than the last Iranian attack in April, where hundreds of projectiles were fired at Israel.
Tonight, there are mounting fears that Israel's long-running hostilities between Iran and its allies could intensify into a wider war.
There are high levels of anxiety here in Israel. Nobody really knows how or when Iran will strike back.
With the funeral rituals for Hamas leader Ismail Haniyeh now over, the explosive fallout of his assassination in Tehran has left a region on edge. Security experts here fear an Iranian attack could include its proxies and be far harsher than the strike in April, when the U.S. and its allies helped down nearly all of the more than 300 missiles and drones fired at Israel. Iran could also potentially attack Israeli assets abroad.
Hezbollah says it carried out another attack on northern Israel. The Israeli military confirmed several rockets had been launched from Lebanon early on Monday. An officer and a soldier were injured in the attack and have been taken to hospital. King Abdullah of Jordan has called for further international efforts to prevent a regional expansion of the conflict.
To another Fox News alert, Israeli officials are bracing for a potential attack from Iran in retaliation for recent assassinations of the top Hezbollah and Hamas leaders. The attack could reportedly come as early as today.
Israel is bracing as the country worries that an attack from Iran and its proxies could be just around the corner. The Wall Street Journal does report that Iran told U.S. and Arab diplomats that it didn't care if its counterstrike started a war. A document sent to mayors of northern cities told officials to prepare for water outages, power cuts, and evacuations. And in Jerusalem, an underground command bunker for government officials was opened by the Shin Bet Security Agency. Preparations for war in the north, and with Iran coming with fighting inside the Gaza Strip, you have Israeli negotiators in the region traveling to Cairo, Egypt this weekend for talks about a possible ceasefire. They reportedly made no progress. And the real concern here is that this counterattack by Iran could unravel and lead the region into a much broader war.
Get out of Lebanon now is the message from the U.S. Embassy in Beirut to Americans here as fears mount that war is coming. Strikes and counterstrikes threaten to escalate into a regional war.
Ephraim, Manasseh, and Judah, all of them on edge. I was thinking this morning as I was trying to wrap my mind around all of the news from the weekend, we're living in a world in revolt. That's what Herbert Armstrong spoke of so many years ago, decades ago, in fact. I mean, we're at the point in these last days, we're at the point where you could almost justify
an end-of-the-year montage, like we have every late December, early January, an end-of-the-year montage every Monday morning. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. You can get to the live video stream of this show at TrumpetDaily.com and also at our Rumble channel, Rumble.com/TrumpetDaily. You can email the show, TD@TheTrumpet.com. We have so much to get to on today's show. We actually had a couple of segments on, a couple of lighter segments on sports. Not sure if we'll have time for it today because we've got a lot of news to get through as well. And we've also got our UK correspondent standing by, Richard Palmer. He's going to update us a little bit later on the rioting that's taking place across the UK. What is going on? What people are distracted with entertainment, the Olympics, a very weird Olympics, by the way. That's going on. But also here in the States, you've got all of this news, as you heard there at the top of the cold open, regarding the economy and the stock market. Is this a major correction or is this a crash, a sign of a recession? We'll see. Kamala mania has gone silent. Not a lot to say about the economy and the sell-off happening around the world, happening here in the United States. Friday, now today. We'll see how that this plays out. But then the unrest and the violence, the wars and the rumors of wars, as Jesus said. It's all over the place. This is not God's world. Surely, if you're new to the program, even you should be able to see that this is not God's world. It's the world described in Revelation 12 and 2 Corinthians 4. This is Satan's world. And we see Satan's fingerprints on all of these dumpster fires. It's everywhere. His influence. Revelation 12, as I say, says that the devil and his demon army, they've been cast down to this earth. And they're now confined to this earth. They've deceived the whole world. We're living in a world full of deception, full of lies, full of murder and violence. And then you've got leadership, like what you saw there in the UK, rushing to the microphone to, and I'm sure Mr. Palmer will have more to say on this, but rushing to the microphone really to defend the violent, illegal immigrants. That verse in Revelation 12, verse 9, about deceiving the whole world. And then verse 12, therefore rejoice, you heavens, and you that dwell in them. Woe unto the inhabitants of the earth and of the sea, for the devil is come down unto you, having great wrath, because he knows that he has but a short time. The devil knows that his time is about up. I read an article yesterday about Jesus of Nazareth and what he spoke, what he preached. The world of churchianity knows nothing about it as they put the focus on the person of Christ. And even on that, they get it wrong, tragically wrong. They portray Jesus as a weak, effeminate, long-haired man. Really, not unlike what you see at the Olympics. I mean, two male competitors in the final for the women's boxing competition. Are you serious? Yeah, it's going on and it's just normal. No, these are abnormal times. It's always been Satan's world from the beginning till now, but we're at the very end where he knows he has but a short time. And so the bizarre, the deviant, the hate, the rage, the violence, it's all on full display. And we're to celebrate it. Look at the approach the UK leadership has taken with respect to, not that there's any justification for rioting or demonstrating, but look at how severe the crackdown is when it's considered, you know, right wing. And we'll find out, hopefully, from Mr. Palmer if that's actually the case. But when it's St. Floyd, I mean, you clear the way and let them burn. Let them burn the cities. When it's demonstrating on behalf of Hamas, you clear the streets and let them destroy London if they have to. But now here we hear a leader that's actually cracking down. on the street protests. Imagine that. The Israelite leaders, the Marxist leaders, they sure love some left-wing violence. But when it comes to the right wing, they will not tolerate it. And they'll blow it up like it's the worst insurrection attempt since the Civil War. Imagine all of those Trump supporters carrying out an insurrection with not one weapon, not one pistol, not one rifle. Tens of thousands of them. It was supposedly coordinated. Trump needs to be in prison because of it. Not one gun. They blow it up, pretend that it was something it wasn't. It was a protest. The one that the FBI infiltrated, by the way. Well, don't get me off track on that. There's too much else to cover on today's show. 2 Timothy 3 and verse 1 says, "This know also that in the last days dangerous times shall come." These are the days we're living in. I went through this passage at that PAC in Phoenix, and we played the excerpts, but it's worth going through again. Dangerous times. I mean, spiritually speaking, we have to, as our recent Royal Vision brought out, we have to have a warlike mindset to prepare for what's coming. They're bracing for war in the Middle East. Our flights, by the way, for the Jerusalem dig, the latest phase of digging in Jerusalem, those were canceled this morning. So that's on delay. The devil's filled with wrath. He doesn't want Israel. He doesn't want Israel's history excavated, among other things, filled with wrath. Verse 2 says, "For men shall be lovers of their own selves, covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy." That's what we see all around us. Unholiness, impurities, unthankful, disobedient to parents. Mr. Armstrong wrote this in The Missing Dimension in Sex, "Since it's a basic truism that a solid family structure is the foundational bulwark of any stable and permanent society, this fact means only one thing. Civilization as we know it is on the way down and out." Unless that great unseen hand, strong hand from someplace, soon intervenes and saves today's sick society. It is sick. Society is sick. Herbert, the last version of that book you see on the screen there, that was in 1981. As I say, he saw what was coming, a world in revolt, a sick society, a society that's killing itself. Were it not for Jesus Christ's timely intervention, we would annihilate ourselves. That's in Matthew 24. That's the Olivet prophecy uttered by Jesus Christ. The Christ that so many people reject, the real Jesus, his gospel message about the soon coming return of God's Son and the establishment of God's kingdom. I mean, the gospel message was about the soon coming kingdom. And you can look at, in I think it's Matthew 1 or 2, he's referred to as the King of the Jews. In Luke 1, he's referred to as the coming king. He was born to be king. You go forward into the end of the Gospels and you see in John 18, he was telling Pilate there that, yeah, I was born to be king. And they just want to spiritualize all of that away and say that, well, that's just talking about something that happens in your heart. Yeah, the kingdom of God in your heart. No, an actual literal kingdom of God is soon to be established on this earth. And you can look around at this world and see why we need it. You can look at the unrest. You can look at a world in revolt. You can look at how dangerous it's getting. And know that we need change. We need God to intervene. We need a new civilization. Joe Biden, the fake president, he came into office saying decency and civility is returning to the White House. It's returning to America. Civility and decency. This is a headline from the New York Post. "Public masturbation soars in New York City with sickos pleasuring and exposing themselves in the open, up 51%. The homelessness It's all over the big cities, and they're just exposing themselves. They're committing sexual acts right out in the open. They're relieving themselves right out in the open. I mean, you'll see clips sometimes on social media. Some kind of violence going on in the foreground, and then in the background, you've got a homeless guy just relieving himself. What is wrong with our cities? How did this happen? Did it happen overnight, or has it been a long, steady progression to this point of Sodom and Gomorrah? Decency returning to the White House. The Daily Mail, another headline. Kamala Harris's husband, Doug Emhoff, cheated on his first wife with daughter Ella's nanny and got her pregnant. Well, there you go. Decency has returned. These are just two examples. I mentioned the Olympics. How strange and bizarre. Just all these different stories coming out from the Olympics, except for Djokovic, okay? He won. He won the Olympics and showed more emotion than he's ever shown. The 37-year-old beating the 20-year-old phenom. Well, maybe we'll have some clips of that if we can ever pause and just focus on a few sports segments, something a little lighter. It's hard to do given what's happening in the world. Maybe we'll have some later. We'll see. Verse 3, without natural affection, truce breakers, false accusers, incontinent, fierce, despisers of those that are good. I mean, if you get out there and you promote good things, biblical things, righteous things, you are made a prey, as Isaiah said. You are a target. The devil and his demon army are going to come after you. If you're upholding law and order, so much of this that's happening in the UK could have been avoided if they just secure their borders. It's the same problem here in the States. But no, the borders are wide open. We invite in the world. The world brings in all of their problems. And at least in the UK, there's some pushback. Verse 4 says, traitors, heady, high-minded, lovers of pleasures more than lovers of God. I mean, that certainly describes our world today. Pleasure-seeking. We love that more than we love God. Sam and I were emailing each other yesterday just about, you know, and President Trump, for his part, he's still out there talking about God's miraculous hand, God intervening on his behalf, God sparing his life, protecting him. God, so this is, I think a lot of people can acknowledge, this is a miracle. This is God intervening on the affairs of this world, changing the course of human history. And we should ask, why? Why did he do that? Why did he intervene? Well, the answer to that question can be found in America Under Attack, this book right here. You can actually get into the why of God intervening supernaturally. But where is there any discussion, besides acknowledging that God intervened to cause the head tilt that saved his life, where is there any discussion of, okay, if God is intervening in this way, what is he trying to tell us? What is he communicating to us? And how should we respond? What should we do? You can read in Acts 16, Paul's in there. He's in prison. He cast the demon out of that crazy woman, and her handlers, they didn't like that. They made a lot of money off of this demon-possessed girl. So they threw Paul and Silas in prison. And they were locked in the dungeon, Paul and Silas, singing praises to God. I think the rest of us would have been singing the blues, okay? Singing praises to God? And then God intervened miraculously. He flung the prison gates open. And the jailer, he was about to kill himself. The Romans would have surely killed him for letting out all the prisoners. Paul said, stop right there. We're still here. Hey, we haven't left. That man and his house was converted to the truth. They received, it says there that they received the teachings of Jesus. They received the message from Jesus through Paul. And guess how they responded after that miraculous intervention on God's part? Guess how the jailer responded? He said, what should we do? What should we do? That's a good question. That's a beautiful question. And it's a question that no one asks today. He was spared by God. God intervened to protect the soon coming president of the United States. Why did he do it? More importantly, what should we do? What is God trying to tell us here? We acknowledge a supernatural miracle, and then we carry on with our business of seeking pleasure. That's what it amounts to. Verse 5. Well, if you drop down to verse 13, evil men and seducers shall wax worse and worse, deceiving and being deceived. And then back up to verse 5, it says, having a form of godliness, but denying the power thereof, from such turn away. It all has a form of godliness. Look, it's inclusive. It's okay. It's okay to have a couple of men come into the women's boxing competition and just start pummeling those women. I mean, why not? We will tolerate anything. Don't you know how religious that is? We don't judge anybody. There are no standards. You live and let live. Just do what you want. Libertarianism on steroids. Is that the way God thinks? What do you suppose God's response would be if after the jailer in Acts 16 says, what should we do? Well, you can see what his response is after Peter's sermon in Acts 2, because the people that heard that message asked the same question. They said, their hearts were pricked, it says. What should we do? And Peter's response, under the inspiration of the Almighty, Peter said, repent. Repent and be baptized and receive the Spirit of God. And why should you need the Spirit of God? Because God expects us to overcome and to grow and to conquer those flaws, those weaknesses, those sins, and to become perfect. Read through the Sermon on the Mount. If you want to learn how to become perfect, it's a lifelong process. It's not going to happen overnight. But read Matthew 5, 6, and 7. Jesus teaches you how to be perfect. Read that sermon and then evaluate yourself. Evaluate where you are in this process. 2 Chronicles 7 and verse 14, I also drew attention to that at the Phoenix Pack. God saying there, if we'll turn from our wicked ways, if we'll seek His face, if we'll pray, then God will hear, God will respond, God will forgive, and God will heal. That's what we need. Nationally, that's what the world needs. It's what we need individually as well. When we come back, we will connect with our UK correspondent, Richard Palmer, as he'll fill in some of the backstory regarding the civil unrest in the UK and also on the escalation of hostilities in the Middle East. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
Prosperity, government, trade, technology, stability, freedom. The last two centuries have been the exception in human history. How did we get here? The 19th century was dominated by an empire that exported civility, order, standards, and opened the doors for global trade. It ended slavery and implemented a system of governance that protected people's rights. And then in the 20th century, a new power came to dominate. Remarkably, one that would continue in the same traditions as its predecessor. For 200 years, the United States and Britain dominated the world stage. How did these two nations rise to prominence so suddenly? And why are their legacies so relentlessly attacked today? The astonishing truth is that your Bible prophesied the rise of Britain and the United States. It also prophesied their fall. The biblical identity of these two nations is the vital key that unlocks Bible prophecy. This lost master key to prophecy is revealed in Herbert W. Armstrong's most requested book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. You must understand the biblical identities of these two nations to comprehend where we are in Bible prophecy today. To learn more about this vital truth, request your free copy of The United States and Britain in Prophecy.
And welcome back to the program. We have Richard Palmer on the line to give us an update on what is happening in the UK. Richard, I don't see you on my screens, but I assume, there you are. Now I see you. Now the audience sees you as well. So there's obviously lots of news happening here in the United States. The United States tends to be America-centric in its news coverage. So there's a lot of people, I'm sure, in our audience that are unaware of what's happening in the UK, or maybe they saw some social media clips over the weekend and they're wondering, how did it come to this? So maybe you could start by just giving us the backstory here.
Certainly. Just looking at the immediate few days, you know, we had an election on July 4th, and just after that, race-related stories kind of exploded. So July 18th, you had this situation where social services went in to take, I think it was three gypsy children, or Roma is the more politically correct term that they like to use now, in Leeds. And they went to take them into care. They were being neglected. This led to massive riots from the gypsy community there. There was a double-decker bus burned. Police cars were overturned. Then July 23rd, you had this video went viral a couple of days later where you had a Muslim arriving in Manchester Airport, and this video showed police officers stamping on his head. So this goes viral. This leads to crowds outside Rochdale Police Station, one of the nearest police stations, shouting Allahu Akbar, protesting police brutality. A few days later, we get the full video that shows this man had actually attacked the police. He and a friend had knocked a couple of policemen to the ground. They'd broken a policewoman's nose. There's potentially broken the jaw of another policeman. And the video was very selectively edited to show these two men being brought under control. Same day that that was happening, you had a British lieutenant colonel was stabbed while he went for a walk near his barracks. And then the big event, July 29th, you had the son of some migrants from Rwanda murdered three children in this kind of killing spree. He stabbed about eight more near in a dance class in Southport. That's near Liverpool. It's actually in the north of England. But this was an event for children aged 6 to 11. So these were little girls. And this 17-year-old boy just showed up at this dance class for little girls and began slashing and stabbing away, and you know, killed three of them and left several others in very, very serious condition. So those are the immediate triggers. Then, of course, you've got the much more long-term issues where, for example, Rochdale, where you've had a lot of these protesters, you had 1,400 girls raped over a period of several years where authorities colluded to cover up the rapes. The rapes were all happening from men of Pakistani Muslim background. That all came out kind of 10, 15 years ago, or 10 years ago or so. But now what we're learning basically is that a lot of these people, they're in prison but never deported. They're now back out of prison. They're back living and working in Rochdale. So, you know, you've had immediate events that have happened over the last few days, but there are also massive long-term grievances as well that have built up to this explosion.
So as far as the Rochdale rapes, I mean, that was a pretty big story even when we were stationed over there for 6 years. And you say some of these criminals have now served their sentence and they're back on the streets. Do you think there's still, you know, a cover up of crimes? Or, I mean, is that an ongoing type thing? Or is it just basically bubbling up the protests against that over the course of so many years?
I think it's a bit of both. I think it's weird where you had I remember when the Rochdale news first came out, there was kind of the fact that it was covered up because that they were Muslim was front page news on a number of newspapers. And you had people in the both political parties, Labour and Conservative Party, talking about it. Now, though, it's kind of back to being taboo and politicians don't go there anymore. Someone was kicked out of the Labour Party for talking about it. And then the government that's just come in, the Labour government, they want to make a new law basically to outlaw Islamophobia, which would outlaw any real discussion of, is there a wider problem within Islam? You know, anything that really talks about the background of these people. So I think, you know, certainly there is a case of media and government going back to this policy of, we don't want to talk about it. And I think that is that we don't want to talk about it mentality is what has led to a lot of this, where, you know, I mentioned, for example, this dance class where it was a boy whose parents had come to the UK from Rwanda who'd done the killing. In the immediate aftermath of the killing, and even now, if you go up and if you look up an article from the BBC on this murder, it will tell you that it was a 17-year-old boy born in Cardiff. Like, that is the message that is put out there. So that's not necessarily government cover-up per se, but certainly mainstream media, you know, the British population feel like they've been lied to because no one is willing to discuss, well, who is behind this? No one was willing to say, well, do we have a problem with immigration? And actually, all of the news stories are reported in such a way that it covers up this angle. I mean, the fact it was surreal looking into this guy that stabbed the British soldier in Kent, for example. He's from Nigeria. No British outlet will say that he's from Nigeria. The only way you can know that he's from Nigeria is by reading Nigerian news sources. So that kind of a cover-up definitely still ongoing.
Well, even with the Rochdale crimes, to this day, I heard one over the weekend where they describe all of the perpetrators as Asian. It drives me crazy that they say Asia very generally, and they don't say Pakistan. They certainly don't say that they're Muslim. They, as you say, it's an orchestrated conspiracy to cover up the truth. Now, with respect to the pushback coming from ordinary British citizens, we heard the Prime Minister there in the cold open talking about the far-right thuggery. I mean, that's pretty specific. There no, like, Asian-like terms with respect to the protesters taking to the streets to push back. From what you've read across the pond, I mean, is this a far-right movement, or is this just more of a general population unrest over being, as you say, being lied to about so many different crimes and problems that the UK is facing?
I mean, I think I'm reminded a lot of January 6th watching this, and it's made me, you know, is this Britain's January 6th moment? And maybe there's more genuine violence here than there was on January 6th. I mean, you look at what's been happening over the weekend, and, you know, there have been some genuine examples of dangerous lawlessness. You know, just to go over some of the events, you had people trying to set fire to a Holiday Inn Express where migrants were being housed in Rotherham. I think we saw it just up on the screen a minute ago where there was a library in Liverpool that was torched. So you know, there is some genuine violence here. At the same time, the largest protest was in Liverpool, and that was 1,500 people. So these are not millions of people taking to the streets. And even where they are taking to the streets, a lot of the organizers are saying, guys, let's stay peaceful. You know, one of the people on Middlesbrough on Sunday, you know, he said, "You're here today, lads, for the three kids who were killed in Southport and the future of our country. It's not about race or color of religion. Let's keep it right today. Stand up for our country, our kids and our families." So a lot of the organizers, a lot of those are saying, look, we want to protest this peacefully. We've had election after election where every single election going back to certainly 2010, probably even before, the winning party has had in their manifesto, we will reduce immigration. Every single election that has not happened. So people feel like, well, we have to do something. We're not being listened to. And generally, the organizers of these protests are saying, or keep them peaceful. Clearly, there are some elements where that's not happening. And I think the other aspect to that is that a lot of the violence is actually coming from those that are called Asians. Again, yeah, it does drive me nuts because I always think when they say Asian, I think Chinese people, but it is Pakistani Muslims. you hear about the there was one news footage where it was a BBC reporter. He was talking about all this far right violence at the protest he was attending, and while he was talking, right behind him in the background, a bunch of Pakistani Muslims carrying machetes walked past. Like, you know, we're not blind. We can see. And it's like this. Even the BBC had another segment where they were talking about how the protest was peaceful until a crowd coming up yelling Allahu Akbar started charging the police. You know, quite clearly, it's not these quote unquote far right thugs that are chanting Allahu Akbar charging the police. So you're having all of the violence is being blamed on the far right when it's not even necessarily coming from them. There maybe is a minority of some violence happening that's being blown out of proportion. And now what you're seeing is it then being weaponized. And I think that's what we've seen from the prime minister's speeches already. So right away, he promised wider deployment of facial recognition technology. He said, basically, we want to restrict the movement of potential rioters so they're stopped, quote, before they can even board a train. You know, we already have, I think the stat until recently was there were more cameras in London than like in Beijing. That might not be up to date anymore, but it's a very heavy surveillance society. So they want to weaponize that. And then they want to go after social media. They want, you know, if you are concerned about migrants, the line is, well, you are spreading the fake news that started the protests. So they very clearly have said, look, we want to come after social media. They've been thinly veiled criticisms of Elon Musk. They've said, look, what's happening online is criminal. We want to take that down. And so, you know, clearly that you have these news articles that cover up the facts. People then go online to get the facts. There has been a bit of false information that's gotten out there as people don't get the information on mainstream media. So they're desperate to find any tidbit they can get. But clearly the main issue is mainstream media won't talk about these facts. Government doesn't like the fact that you can get some of this information online. So they're going to use that as well. They're saying to crack down on social media too.
Never let a crisis go to waste. We're very familiar with that over here in America as well, using a crisis or a perceived crisis to actually grow the power of government. Some excellent insights there, Richard. We appreciate you giving us those. To shift gears just a little bit, give us the latest on the escalation of tensions in the Middle East with respect to Israel. And of course, Hezbollah, backed by Iran.
Like you said earlier on the show, it certainly does feel like something is building there. You've had over the weekend, UK and US authorities really urge their citizens that are in Lebanon to get out of there. The UK's put helicopters, and I think they've got a landing troop ship and some these kind of things on standby in case they need to get UK citizens out in a hurry. Axios was reporting this morning that the U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken had a call with his G7 counterparts, and he was basically saying we expect something big could happen within the next 24 to 48 hours. So that was on Sunday, so that would be today and tomorrow potentially. So, you know, there is an expectation that Israel is quite severely hurt Hezbollah and Iran. And that we could see something come back. And I was talking to a colleague, one point I thought he made that was very good, that ties into what you were saying about just even the rumors of war, that even just this threat kind of hanging there is hurting Israel. And you mentioned the flights that are getting canceled. You start to look at the lost tourism income that comes because of that, the lost trade income because of that. If the rest of the world is kind of too scared to do business with Israel because they're afraid that something is coming, just having that hanging over Israel can do a lot of economic damage. So you've got that going on as well. And of course, it's important to remember that northern Israel, there's still a lot of people out of their homes and have been since October 7th. I think it's tens of thousands, potentially even hundreds of thousands, that have had to come away from that whole Lebanon border area and haven't been able to go back for a long time. So there's even just long-term issues that are hurting Israel there. And of course, there's the risk that, or the possibility that Iran or Hezbollah's revenge could strike other nations apart from Israel, that they could lash out at some of these Sunni Arab nations that have lent Israel maybe some tacit support or to kind of have a strike that way.
Just what the world needs, another war in these last days. And as you know from Bible prophecy, those of you that watch regularly, Christ prophesied that it's only going to get worse. I just read it to you in 2 Timothy 3. So thank you, Richard, for giving us a wider worldview on today's show. And speaking of worldview, tell us a little bit while we have a minute or two. Tell us about the new program that we're posting at thetrumpet.com called Trumpet World, of which you are the beloved host.
Yes, it's our exciting project that we've been quietly working on behind the scenes for quite a few weeks, and we've been very excited to debut that now, where we have this program, Trumpet World, where, as you say, it's aimed on all of these prophetic events that are happening all around the world. We're actually, some of our English language audience might not be aware of this, but we're trying to kind of use some of these new tools that are coming online to have this go out, not just in English, but French, German, and I think Spanish as well. We're still getting adapted a bit to the workflow there. And we want to aim this at the world. And then also, you know, anyone in the United States who's interested in world news. So we're predominantly focused on what's happening all around the world rather than the United States. It also gives us an opportunity to go back on YouTube, where we ended up being forced off there for the Trumpet Daily, because we're not going to be talking about things like the US election steal or COVID. We're hoping that we'll be able to remain on YouTube and potentially reach an audience there as well. So way we've got it structured at the moment, we have the Friday show that's pretty similar to the Friday Trumpet Hour that we used to have, where we give a rundown of these are the top stories of the week. And we'll cover stories from all around the world, especially including the United States, especially on that week in review, where we're just focused on, well, what are the most important stories in the light of Bible prophecy that we can go over. And then the Wednesday show is an opportunity to take a deeper dive into maybe long-term trends, potentially things that are maybe less immediately driven by the everyday news cycle, but are very important. I think it's an opportunity to get into more detail on the Bible prophecy. So on our first Wednesday show, we used the Olympic Games to dig into France. So we talked about some of the history of the Olympics, going back to Adolf Hitler even hosting the Olympics in the 1930s, France hosting the Olympics before in the 1920s, some of what we saw on display in the Olympics. We talked about France in Bible prophecy and concluded with some positive sports stories, including a British gold medalist that I managed to sneak in there in the last half. So the Wednesday shows will hopefully give us an opportunity to go into a deeper dive in some of those important global stories.
So some deeply biased coverage on the British sportsmen.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes, indeed. We have some of that on our show as well. Where this effectively replaces Trumpet Hour, is that right?
That's correct. So,
and then where do you get to the, you mentioned YouTube. There's a YouTube channel. And then is there a tab for the show on thetrumpet.com, or does it just get posted sort of on the front page like I noticed last week?
Still working on a few of these things. So yes, we have a YouTube channel. We have a Rumble channel as well for our Rumble audience, just called Trumpet World over on Rumble. If you kind of scroll down on the Trumpet homepage to where they have the podcasts, we have a Trumpet World kind of icon there where there used to be Trumpet Hour. And then hopefully soon up in the videos tabs where there is the Key of David and there's the Trumpet Daily, I think we're hoping to have Trumpet World added up there. So at the moment, if you go to videos and then it's just, is it up at the moment? I'm seeing our producer, George, who's been doing a whole lot of work getting this off the ground, is giving me the thumbs up that we're already up on the videos tab. So if you head over to the videos section, you can, on the website, you can find Trumpet World.
Good stuff. Last question, and this is the most important one, given your schedule now for Wednesdays and Fridays, adding the college load coming on next week. When will be the best day of the week, the work week, for you to sub in on the Trumpet Daily?
Oh, probably Monday or Wednesday, because actually the way it works is we do a lot of the production for Trumpet World on Tuesdays and Thursdays. So we have, at the moment, the next day for editing. We're hoping to get the Friday Trumpet Hour where we can record on Friday, but that's just a small window to produce the video. So anyway, at the moment, Monday and Wednesday.
All right, then, you heard it here first. Richard will be available most likely on Mondays and Wednesdays, and we'll be taking advantage of his sub opportunities in the weeks and months ahead. Thank you, Mr. Palmer. Thank you for joining us on today's episode of The Trumpet Daily.
Thanks so much for having me.
You are listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We'll take a quick break and then finish off with some viewer feedback. We'll be right back.
Daily news, Bible prophecy. See the connection on the Trumpet Daily. Are you feeling overwhelmed by the flood of news and information? You need something to sift the news and bring you only what matters most. You need the Trumpet Daily. You also need something to help you understand not just what's happening now, but what will happen next. You need the Trumpet Daily. Only the Trumpet Daily accurately matches daily news to precise Bible prophecies. Because Bible prophecy is the only tool up to the task of sifting the news down to what's important and showing you what will happen next. Join host Stephen Fleury every weekday. Go to TrumpetDaily.com.
We'll have to save some of our lighter fare for tomorrow's show or maybe a show later this week. So you have that to look forward to. Much needed, given the world in turmoil that we're in at the moment. A few emails. Dr. Fauci needs to come up with a vaccination for Trump derangement syndrome. You know, because he's science. Another one here writes, the Donald has been up to his waist in alligators ever since 2016. He is a fighter. I sure hope the Democrats don't derail him somehow. Cheating, the race card, what else? Good time to play some golf. Well, there you go. You've got your lighter fare. You've got some commentary on sports. And by the way, one of the longer clips that we have, it's a synopsis, basically, of Donald Trump playing with the world's number one golfer. I mentioned that last week. And when it's condensed down to 6 or 7 minutes, it really is enjoyable to watch. I happened to watch the entire 55 minutes, and our producers did as well. But they've given you the best 7 minutes, as I say. Maybe we can finish off tomorrow's program with that. Another one here says, I look forward to watching your show every day. I'm requesting at least one outdoor show on campus, if it's not too much trouble with cameras and audio. You spoiled us viewers when you did your show at the summer camping trip. Keep up the good work. Well, as I said before, we've got a lot of beautiful locations around campus. Even at this time of year, the hottest time of the year, the campus is still, for the most part, relatively green. And of course, it's, as you see behind me, it's covered in trees and all of these beautifully, beautifully landscaped hills and so on, right across the 160 acres. Another one says, thank you. This is in response to Richard Palmer's new show, as you just heard about. Thank you for the exciting new Trumpet World program. It was a riveting introduction and a much more engaging hour, putting faces to the recognized voices speaking. Thoroughly enjoyable. God is certainly blessing this work. And I think several have commented on how nice it is to, and you see a lot of those faces, you see their bylines with so many of the articles that we post at thetrumpet.com. And so as this viewer brings out, it's just nice to put a name to the face. Another one here says, thank you for all the important coverage on the recent assassination attempt that you wouldn't get anywhere else. That's true. I mean, it's being blotted out already. I mean, they just move on. That happened, what, 3 weeks ago? And people are already trying to forget about it or to blot out the imagery surrounding that assassination attempt. It says here, you get the entire perspective on any important news event, especially from the biblically prophetic standpoint. So there you go. If you'd like to email the program with some feedback, you can reach us at td@thetrumpet.com, or you can post a comment there at the Rumble channel. Sometimes we'll go and grab some of those comments to read back to you on the air. Either way, we'd love to hear from you. That's all we have time for on today's show, the fastest moving hour in broadcasting. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Thanks for joining us today. We'll see you tomorrow.